No video? Okay, great. That's good. Hi, how you doing? My name is Deb Yates, in case you're visiting. You don't know who I am. I'm filling in for Pastor Bill this morning, and I am thrilled to be here. If you are visiting, you may not be aware, we've been working through this series of books by James Bryan Smith. A couple of years ago, did The Good and Beautiful Life. Last year was The Good and Beautiful, or Good and Beautiful God First, Good and Beautiful Life last year. Now we're working our way through The Good and Beautiful Community. And it's talking about how we as a family of believers are supposed to live and interact with each other and with our communities. And this week, as you can see on the slide, our topic is the generous community. Now, I always like to start with like a little, you know, story. They teach you that in teacher school, that you're supposed to start with something to catch everybody's attention. So here's the little story. I like sweets. For those of you that know me, this is no surprise. But over the years, I've gotten to where I'm a little more discerning. Used to be I would eat anything that had sugar. Now, I can pretty much leave things alone except for good dark chocolate and Cindy's cheesecake. If you've had Cindy's cheesecake, you know what I'm talking about. So I can be enjoying one of these wonderful, delightful things, and somebody will come along and ask to share. Ooh, can I have a bite of your cheesecake? No. Okay, that's what I want to say. I don't actually say that. I'm like, sure, why not? And all the time I'm thinking, can I take bigger bites so that I get more, right? It's a character flaw. I'm sorry. That's just who I am. Dark chocolate and Cindy's cheesecake. So, talking about being generous as a community. Now, for those of you who may be visiting today, don't check out because you think I'm going to be talking about just this congregation. And if you're not a regular attender, that this doesn't apply to you, because being generous as a community only works insofar as we as individuals are generous. And that's something that we all can work on, and we all can evaluate in our lives. And by the way, I have a couple of disclaimers before I really get started. Number one, this morning is not about money. So you can take your hand off your wallet. It's okay. Well, it is about money, but it's not just about money. It's about so much more than that. I didn't want you to think that this was the money talk. You know, generosity, right? That's what it has to be. And the other thing that I want you to be aware of as we get started is, this is not the, I'm wagging my finger at you, you're not doing enough, and you need to be doing more. It's not that. This is not a trip down guilt trip lane, okay? So if you ever at any point this morning start feeling guilty, like, oh my gosh, I need to be doing more, stop it, all right? That's not what this is about. So I just wanted to make sure we were clear on those two things before we get started. We all know we're supposed to be generous, right? That's kind of a given. And we even know why we're supposed to be generous. So what are some of the things that God has gifted us with that we can be generous with? This is the audience participation part of the program. What, Ben?
Time.
Love. Talents, and that could be a whole range of different things. Money, we can be generous with our money. What? Forgiveness, excellent. I hadn't thought of that one. What? Knowledge. Yes, generous with the cheesecake. Absolutely. What about our energy? Can we be generous with our energy? Is that something? Okay. How about physical strength? Like if somebody needs help moving, that's a time thing, but it's also a physical strength. Okay, so if you have the ability to help someone with some physical task, then, you know, that's something we could be generous with. Those are all things that we as believers, as followers of Jesus, can and should be, to whatever extent we are able, generous with. What about even being generous with just the essence of who we are? Can you be generous with your smile? In giving hugs? In playing games with children? That's one of my favorites. You know, because then I'm really just a kid at heart, so I like doing that. Can we be generous in reminding people of their value as children of God? Is that something we can be generous with? So that's what I'm saying. It's not just about money. There's just a whole wide range of things that we're talking about here. And as a group, as a congregation, we are incredibly generous. This is the part you need to be really encouraged about, because if you look at what we've done as a congregation financially, the Living Link missionaries that we support, our Faith Promise organizations that we support, the every time that there's a food drive or a diaper drive or a toiletries drive or a medical supplies drive, we are there. We are filling the boxes and the bags. And we're generous with our physical space. We have young men that come and play basketball here on Monday nights. We have outside organizations that have meetings here. We have last summer, Share used this as one of their sites. So we're generous with our building. We're generous with our time and with our other resources. I was here for Vacation Bible School last summer. I saw all of the generosity that was happening during that week. We have people that serve meals at Open Door, backpack buddies helping with that. We have people going on mission trips to Guatemala and Uganda, and in the past the youth have gone to LA and Detroit. We have people that volunteer at Central Park Elementary. We have people that help at Shelter House. We have people who are so faithful in making food for funeral dinners and for people who have we are a generous people, and I want you to give yourself a pat on your back. Right now. Everybody, go ahead. It's okay. You can actually do it. I'm giving you permission. Yes. So this is not about doing more, because we already do a really good job. But you know what? Cindy's cheesecake aside, there are some times that I really don't want to be generous. I don't. And that's also another character flaw of mine, but I'm working on it. And I think that we all probably feel that way at some point or another, and probably it happens for me more often than I'd care to admit. So the question is, why? And that's where, in the book, James Brian Smith talks about these false narratives, these stories that are a part of our thought processes and a part of who we are. And these are things that we pick up through our family experience, through things that we encounter in society. But reasons why we have something going in our head that is different from what God teaches and what God would like for us to do. So one false narrative as far as being generous is, God helps those who help themselves, right? That's the American ideal. You pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You don't depend on anybody. You just figure it out for yourself. And actually, we don't want to help other people because, you know what, they need to buckle down and do it themselves. And this is great, because basically what are we saying? We're saying, I want to make sure I say this right because it'll not work if I don't. I'm actually helping you out by not helping you. Isn't that what we're saying? Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, you know what? The way that God sees things, God helps those who cannot help themselves. And you know what? That includes every single one of us. Every single one of us in this room. Paul writes in Romans 5, 6, when we were utterly helpless, Christ came at just the right time and died for us sinners. Not just for one or two of us, for all of us. We were all sinners, and Christ came before we had our act together, and he died for us when we were utterly helpless. That's the best example I can give right there of God helps those who cannot help themselves. But that's not the only false narrative. We talked about this in youth Sunday school this morning. If I give what I have away, I'll have less. Okay, sure. If I give somebody else my cheesecake, then I won't have it to eat. Absolutely, in a worldly sense, that is the way it goes. If I write you a check for $50, my checkbook is going to be $50 lighter. But are we really supposed to be focused on the worldly sense of giving and being generous and things like that? No. What God says, what the kingdom narrative is that if we all share, we'll all have enough. So I might have a resource, energy, time, the ability to lift heavy things, that you don't, and you might have a resource that I don't, and so if we pool our stuff together, we all have what we need. It's helping each other out. Jesus said in Luke 6:38, "Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." Now, I got to say this. I'm pretty sure you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Give, and it will be given to you. That's one of the verses. You may have heard of the prosperity gospel, where if you give the church $50, then magically $500 is going to end up in your mailbox. That is not what we're talking about. The reward that Jesus is talking about is, again, not a worldly reward, but a kingdom reward. Knowing that you are doing God's work, the satisfaction that comes with knowing that you've helped someone and advanced the kingdom, maybe that's what that person needed to be able to see Jesus at work in their lives. Right? That's a pretty big reward for people who are following Jesus and living in the kingdom. That's the kind of reward that we're talking about. But yet there's a third false narrative about being generous, and this is the one where I get tripped up a lot. This is, I won't say my favorite, it's the one that kind of drags me down a little. It's mine. Why should I give it away? It's mine. And I'm going to use it how I want. This is a product of the Lego my ego culture, right? You've seen the commercial, the ego pops up and one person grabs another person, Lego my ego, it's mine. You can't have any because I grabbed it first. Well, in the kingdom narrative, what I have is actually God's, and it's to use to his glory. So it's not mine, it's his, so I need to be thinking, how can I use it the way that God would use it? Psalm 127, "Unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the builders is wasted. Unless the Lord protects a city, guarding it with sentries will do no good. It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning until late at night, anxiously working for food to eat, for God gives rest to his loved ones." It's not your house, it's not your city, it's the Lord's to build, it's the Lord's to guard, and it's the work is not for you to get the food. God will provide the food that you need. So, three false narratives. Apparently this is a big deal, because if there are three, I'm sure there's more than three false narratives, but at least three, there's got to be a solution, right? And I love the way that the author phrases this. We need to look at it from the perspective of the theology of enough. The truth is that if we feel like we're not going to have what we need, we have a tendency to hoard things. We hold on to what we have, even if we have way more than what we need. Just because, you know, those false narratives, if I give it away, I won't have enough, or it's mine to do with what I want. So if we're afraid that we might be lacking, we're going to hang on to things. I have a video to show you, and I'm going to apologize right now because I've watched it four or five times, and it sets my teeth on edge every single time, and you'll see why in just a second. Because this is pretty typical. Okay, there's about 20 seconds more of that, but I think you get the basic idea. You can stop. Okay, so what do you notice about what's going on in this video? This is also audience participation part. Either that, or what parent thinks it's funny to videotape their kids, like, Okay, what else do you notice? What? Katie? They both want the same truck. But did you notice? There were a bunch of others, like four other trucks sitting there. But the older kid, the stronger kid, said, no, this one's mine. And neither one of them was said, okay, I'll go and I'll just play with the yellow one. Not a problem. And you know, that's what kids do. If you've had children, if you were a child at one point in your life, you know that this is just a part of growing up, that you have to learn to share. And sometimes you want the same toys. Okay, so we're kind of willing to let that one slide a little bit. But unfortunately, it doesn't stop with kids and their trucks. How often, one of the things I thought of was, there's a forecast for, and there's not, unfortunately, because I would love a snow day, there's a forecast for a big snowstorm coming. And everybody rushes to Meijer, and you have to buy 10 cases of water for a storm that might shut you down for 2 days. How much water are you drinking? Like, what, do you have an ark that you're trying to float in your backyard? But we're afraid that we might not have enough, so we've got to hoard, we've got to hang on to it. And unfortunately, it's not just individuals as adults that do this. Countries can even do this. Don't we, last time I knew, the U.S. government pays farmers not to farm when there are other countries in the world, people are dying of starvation. Because gosh darn it, we got to hold on to what we've got. It's ours. We're going to do with it what we see fit. And you never know when we might need it, so we better hold on to it. So that's a pretty common thing. So this is a tough thing for us here in the United States. Because we live in a culture of excess. And we are constantly bombarded with messages that you can never have enough. You always have to be going for more and more and more and more. Some of you may know this story. John D. Rockefeller, in the early 1900s, he was a billionaire. 100 years ago, he was a billionaire. And a reporter one time asked him, "How much money do you need?" Do any of you know what he said in response? Just a little bit more. In other words, there is no such thing as enough. He had more money than most of the rest of the world combined, and he said he needed just a little bit more. That's the culture that we live in. And you know what? I am not saying that having a lot of money is a bad thing. And I'm also not saying that having very little money is a good thing. That's not the point. The point is that no matter how much or how little you have, it's about your attitude toward it. Do you hoard and hold tight to what you have, regardless of whether it's a lot or a little? Or do you understand that everything that we have is a gift from God, and we can see what we have, we can see our resources as a tool to give, to be generous, to advance God's kingdom? Is it this or is it this? No matter how much you have. In both plenty and in want, it really comes down to trusting the Lord to provide our enough. When Jesus was teaching his disciples how to pray in what we now know as the Lord's Prayer, he said, and this is from the New Living Translation, Luke 11:3, he told his disciples to pray this: give us each day the food that we need. It wasn't give us enough for the next 6 weeks. It wasn't give us what we need and then extra so we can gorge ourselves. It was give us enough. Earlier in Luke, in chapter 9, the disciples apparently were ready for their first. Jesus was taking the training wheels off and sending them out. And he said to his disciples, he's sending them off to minister, One day Jesus called together his 12 disciples and gave them power and authority to cast out all demons and to heal all diseases. Then he sent them out to tell everyone about the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. Here's the great, I would have been all about that up until this point. And then the next thing he said, I'd be like, oh, I don't know about this, Jesus. Jesus said to them, take nothing for your journey. Don't take a walking stick, a traveler's bag, food, money, or even a change of clothes. Wherever you go, stay in the same house until you leave town. And if a town refuses to welcome you, shake its dust from your feet as you leave to show that you have abandoned those people to their fate. So they began their circuit of the villages, preaching the good news and healing the sick. So in other words, Jesus said, you have what you need. You have enough. And just go and do what I need for you to do, and I will make sure that you have what you need as you go. You will have enough. And do you remember when the disciples came back after they did this? Do you remember how excited they were? Because they were casting out demons, they were healing the sick, and people were responding to the message because they trusted Jesus and they had enough, which is pretty awesome. So the big question is then, how do we know what's enough? I know that's what you've been thinking. You're like, okay, let's just get down to it. Tell me what it is. How much is enough? Well, guess what? I don't have an answer for you. I know you're going to get up and walk out now. They probably have cookies out there, soup on Sunday after service, and the cookies are probably already out. You're just going to go now. Because see, the thing about being generous is this is not something that you just put on your to-do list so that you can check it off. I've given enough. I've given enough, so I'm good. I don't have to give anymore. I don't have to be generous anymore. We aren't generous with the resources God has gifted us with to meet some shifting goal. That's not the point. And I would love to be able to tell you that if you give this much, fill in the blank, time, energy, talent, whatever the case may be, if you give this much, then trust Him to provide the rest of your needs, then that's the magic number. I can't do that because different is, or enough is different for everybody. Looking around here, we have people, if you're a single person with not very much debt to speak of, then your enough is going to be different than a family of five with two jobs, a mortgage, and a dog. It just is. Or if you're a retired couple, your enough is going to be different than the family of five. And if you're a single mom, your enough is going to be different than everybody else's. So I can't give you that magic number, because it's really not about that anyway. It's about trusting God to provide what you need, to give you enough. So there's no minimum number of projects you need to get involved in here in the church. There's no magic number of mission trips that you should go on. There's no perfect amount of time that you should spend in the nursery, helping in the nursery, or being a greeter, or whatever the case may be. That's just not the way it goes. So I can't tell you how much is enough for you, but I can tell you, or I can ask you, to take a look at your life and how things are going and what you're doing and evaluate. That's what I can do. And there's something else, and I'm probably not going to be theologically correct here, you know, PC, TC, you know, I don't want to, but I feel like it's really important to say this. We're supposed to be generous with whatever we have, but I don't think that we ever, that God expects us to be generous to the point where our families suffer. If you're never home, if you're not able to pay your bills, I just really feel, please take this in the way that I'm intending it, not necessarily in the way that I'm saying it, because I think that that's important that we understand that. D.L. Moody said it great. I came across this quote by him. He said, a man ought to live so that everybody knows he is a Christian, and most of all, his family ought to know. I love that. So as we're talking about today being generous, you can't forget about your family. And I just needed to say that. Is that okay that I said that? Okay, all right. I'll probably get yelled at later, but that's okay. I can take it. So one last thing we need to talk about with this theology of enough, because ladies and gentlemen, we have been lied to by our society. We have. I don't think that's any surprise to any of you, because our society tells us that enough is not good enough. We have to have more and more and more, and we have to have it faster and faster and faster. I read a book that actually was mentioned in one of the earlier renditions of James Bryant Smith's books, I think it was A Good and Beautiful Life, a book entitled Margin. And I got the book and I read it. It took me several months because I didn't have a whole lot of time, but I read the book. And he talks about how society expects us to always do more, always have more, and always happening, and all of that happening faster. So it sets us up for this idea of, apparently this is something the kids say these days, FOMO.
Fear of missing out.
Yeah, my children tell me that they don't really say that, but Mr. Naffy knew what FOMO was, so we're all good. Fear of missing out. So that if you don't have what everybody else has, somehow you're inadequate. If you're not doing what everybody else is doing, somehow you're falling behind. We know that Christmas is very commercialized, but for some reason this year, it really was really obvious to me as I was watching, you know, Charlie Brown Christmas and Grinch is a favorite in our house, and the commercials were all about, if you really want to have a good Christmas, you need to buy this, right? So I went back and I found one of those commercials, and I think hopefully it'll work.
For real? Is this for me? For real? No.
You remember this one or this series?
Happy?
Woo!
Nothing brings out your inner child like the holidays. Experience the excitement of the Lexus December to Remember sales event. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
So nothing brings out the inner child like a new Lexus in your driveway on Christmas morning. I didn't have a new Lexus in my driveway. Anybody? Anyone? But apparently, according to that, I'm falling behind somehow because I don't have a new Lexus in my driveway. But that's what our society sells us on. I was listening to Pandora, music streaming service, for those of you who don't know, and one of the commercials was, and I think it was for a car thing, I'm not 100% positive, but the deal was you would have to work late 93 nights to afford this, whatever it was. I think it was a car. But if you buy it from us, you'll only have to work late for 90 days. And that's a great deal. And I figured it out. Working late 90 days, assuming a 5-day work week, that's over 4.5 months you would have to work late every single night. And I'm supposed to think this is a good thing? I love my job, but yeah. But that's what our society is telling us. The problem is that if we fall for this more and more and more and faster and faster and faster philosophy, in reality, we end up with less and less. We end up with less time. In the book Margin, and if you're interested, I can get you the information for that book too. Richard Swenson, the author, quotes, "In 1967, testimony before a Senate subcommittee claimed that by 1985, people could be working just 22 hours a week, or 27 weeks a year." Wouldn't that be nice? And yet, regularly, we're putting in 50 and 60 and 70-hour work weeks, and we don't take our vacation time because we have to keep up. We end up with less money. Yeah, I could buy a Lexus, But my budget would be stretched thin. Our family's budget would be stretched so thin that I would have no room, no space, no margin to do anything else, to be generous in any other way with my finances. We'd end up with less energy. Now, I give what I can when I can as far as a time and energy type of a thing, but I've found out the hard way through trial and error that I need to have time home. We talk about the theology of enough. I need to have enough time at home to recharge and stay balanced. I need to have that. So for me, talking about the theology of enough, I need to have enough time at home to make sure that I am balanced and that I am rested and recharged. And yet at the same time, I have friends that can go and go and go and go and go, and they love it, and that's how they recharge. If I try and keep up with them, I go crazy. And if they were to try and do what I was doing, they would go crazy because they need to be going. So that's why before when I said, I can't tell you how much is enough, that's kind of what I was talking about. But if I try and fall into this more and more and faster philosophy, I'm going to end up a mess on the floor because that's just is not the way that God created me. So if our schedules, talking about having space to be generous, if our schedules are booked from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. every single day, then we are almost literally handcuffed when we have an opportunity to help someone because there's just no time. It would be really nice, wouldn't it, if God would send us a text message that said, 3 weeks from Thursday, your neighbor's going to have a heart attack, and I really would like you to be available to help them as they recover. Wouldn't it be nice? You could put it in your schedule, put it in your Google Calendar, and then you're all ready to go, right? So you can schedule it in there. But that's not the way it works. If our bank accounts are stretched to the penny every month, we can't even pay for the coffee of the person behind us in line, let alone have the margin, the space, the freedom to join in some other projects that might be advancing God's kingdom. We just don't have the space. And if we're constantly sleep-deprived and exhausted, we feel guilty and helpless when we hear that a local organization needs help. Maybe Shelter House needs a hand, or Pregnancy Resource Centers, a couple of our Faith Promise ministries. Maybe Open Door needs somebody to help serve meals on a Saturday morning. So one of two things then is going to happen. Either we don't go when the call goes out because we're sleep deprived and exhausted, and then we feel guilty and we feel like we're failing at this generosity thing. Or we go, but we end up more sleep deprived and more exhausted, and we resent the fact that we felt like we had to go. So if we want to have the freedom to be generous, we've got to watch to make sure that we're not, I guess it's just that we're not overbooking ourselves, right? So, like I said, this is a part where I was afraid you were going to start feeling a little guilty, like I'm just doing this. I'm not. I'm just saying we got to be careful about listening to what our society says and jam-packing everything into our schedules and our budgets and our resources, getting stretched a little too thin. So remember at the beginning when I said we know why we need to be generous? I know that was a long time ago. Maybe you remember, maybe you don't. But maybe it's not such a good idea to assume that you know why. Maybe let's just put it out there. Why do we need to be generous? Well, this whole series we're talking about living like Jesus did and doing the things that Jesus did. So we probably should look to see what did Jesus say about our motivation for doing everything. Because if you don't know what your motivation is, you're kind of lost. You're just doing it so that you can, like I said, check things off the list. Well, at one point in his ministry, Jesus was asked what the most important commandment was. And the story is in several of the Gospels, but in Mark, Jesus replies, "The most important commandment is this. Listen, O Israel, The Lord our God is the one and only Lord. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. And the second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. No other commandment is greater than these. Living with others. I know, wouldn't life be great if there were no people? But there are. That was not in my script, by the way. Living with others, building relationships with others, building our relationship with God, what's the most important thing in all of that? Love. Love the Lord, love yourself, love your neighbors. No other commandment is greater than these. So really, Jesus is saying that the thing that we should be most generous with is our love. Because you know what? If you're being generous with your love, I think all the rest of that kind of falls into line. So here's the really great news. The reason that you stuck it out this morning. In the book margin, Richard Swenson says, love is not like other resources. There's an infinite supply. You can use it and use it and use it. Yet there will still be more left over. As a matter of fact, the more it is used, the more its supply increases. Some guard their supply of love, doling it out in portions. But this kind of thinking works with money, not with love. With money, the more you hoard, the richer you become. But with love, the more you spend, the richer you become. And this is, I love this. Spending and receiving love is the best part of kingdom work. It is. Knowing that the love that you have given someone else was love that you've given on God's behalf, and to see that at work in someone's life, that is the best part of following Jesus. So what we really need to do to be generous, do you remember if you were here the very first week when Matt opened the series, he talked about us being weird. In the book, James Brian Smith uses the word peculiar. So we need to get peculiar. Some of us are already there. And not in the kingdom sense. I'm there. So what that means is that we need to be different from the rest of our society. We need to say, Lord, your enough is enough for me. Stop seeking after what society says we need. So ask yourself, can you trust God to provide what you need? Can we trust that he's going to give us enough from his perspective, not from ours, not from society's? Can we do that? Jesus is talking to his disciples about how to live and compared it, like Mark was talking with the kids, compared it to things that they would understand. Birds being fed. You know, God takes care of the birds. They have the food they need. The lilies of the field are dressed beautifully, better than Solomon ever was dressed. And we're so much more important than birds and lilies. Won't God also take care of us? And he says to his disciples, so don't worry about these things, saying, what will we eat? What will we drink? What will we wear? These things dominate the thoughts of unbelievers, but your heavenly Father already knows all your needs. Seek the kingdom of God above all else and live righteously, and he will give you everything that you need. It's tough, I know. It's hard to put yourself in that position where you trust God for what you need. And I'm going to blame it on society because they're the ones that are telling you need the iPhone 10 and you need the Lexus in the driveway and all that. So that's really the challenging part, because not only do we have to be able to say, Lord, enough from you is enough, it's what I need, but we also need to be able to turn to our society and say, you know what? Enough is enough. I'm done. Sometimes we need to be able to say no. I know that's tough. If you say no to another activity that fills up your schedule, you say no to another responsibility that puts stress on your budget, you say no to another thing that's going to suck the life out of you. Because sometimes saying no over here allows you to say yes over here. It gives you that margin, that space that you need when the Lord taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, I got an opportunity for you over here. So your soul training for this week: be peculiar so you can be generous. And there may be nothing in the soul training this week. Soul training is practicing. You know, the Olympic athletes that are performing right now, they didn't just wake up yesterday and decide they were going to do skeleton today. You know what the skeleton is? That's when you're hurtling down the mountain, face down, head first, and you crash and you die. That's skeleton. They've been practicing. So our soul training is practicing. And I'm not actually going to ask you to necessarily do anything. I just want you to be thinking and taking a look. Take a look at what you can do, possibly, to free up some room in your give yourself some margin, some space. Did you know that the average American watches about 30 hours of TV a week? And that's not even counting time online. I don't know which Netflix, I don't know if that counts as TV or time online, but there's a couple lot more hours there. So maybe after the Olympics are over, you could, sorry, we have the Olympics on all the time. Maybe you could shut the TV off, and that would give you some space in your schedule to perhaps be ready if and when God taps you on the shoulder and asks you to help out. Maybe just take a look at what you're doing. How many times a day or a week or a month do you eat out when you just don't feel like cooking? Maybe you're considering buying a new Lexus and perhaps that's not necessarily the best decision. Or is there something in your budget where you can trim? Can you slow down and take time to actually talk to people? You go to the same restaurant, you have the same waitress. Do you ever ask her or him, it's not always women, do you ever ask your server, hey, how you doing? Have a conversation with them. Do you ever, at the gas station, make eye contact with the clerk and say, you know what, I hope you have a nice day. If you're in a hurry and you don't have time, you can't do that kind of stuff. Can you talk to the person next to you in class? Or are you running in at the last second before class starts? So just think about that. But here's another thing that I want you to consider. Being peculiar, it may not be that God wants you to do more or that God's going to ask you to do more. Maybe he wants you to consider something different. Maybe you are generous with the same resource the same way all the time, and maybe it's time to ask God, is there something else you'd like me to do? I will tell you, if you pray that prayer, if you ask him that, be prepared to be uncomfortable. So maybe it's not more, maybe it's different. Maybe he wants to tap you on the shoulder and say, next year, Guatemala. I don't know. Or maybe you have some thing that you're passionate about. I'm starting to get really sick of winter, so I've started already planning my gardening. So maybe you love to garden. Maybe that's something that you could share with the community around us. You know, we're talking about reaching out to our community. Maybe you love to sew. Maybe you love to read to children, but you think, oh, that's not something that God could ever use. Maybe you're a great fix-it person. Maybe you are good at fixing cars. Maybe that's something that you could share with somebody. Maybe you're good at just sitting and listening. It's not about whether you have a lot or a little. It's about your attitude toward it, and it's about how you use it. If nothing else this week, I want you to consider how you could be generous with your love. Because really, isn't that the most important thing? So if nothing else, think this week about how you can be generous in loving people. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the people gathered here today and the generosity that they have already expressed throughout the days and the weeks and the months and the years. And I would ask, Lord, that you would encourage them and help them to leave here feeling like, yeah, I can do this. Not that it's yet another responsibility, but that it's something to joyously and joyfully participate in, because it's helping to let other people see you and see your love for them through us. And I would ask that you would bless each of us with an opportunity this week to see how we could participate in your kingdom work in a new and different and special way. I ask all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.